Hello, hello. It's lovely to be back with you guys. I'm sorry about that long radio silence that I had. Several things were happening in my life and all these other things that I'm not going to delve into. But today I actually have the years 900 to 991. It's going to cover the era between Kings Alfred and King Ethelred II for his first time being king over Wessex. Now, thank you for listening. I'm going to leave it up to future me. First, I'd like to say thank you for being patient with this. I've been keeping this on the back burner for a couple months now, maybe half a year. And I've only covered 116 years since Alfred's death, which is about 3 pages worth of notes now, compared to an average 1 or 2, which tends to happen once you have a ruler that actually starts writing stuff down. You have more stuff to go off of. So anyway, back to it. Starting off with Alfred's death in 899, the Witten name his son Edward, King of Wessex, and then Edward the Elder, as he's known, with his sister Ethelfled, form an alliance of sorts between the nations. In the 1910s, Ethelfled extended the burhs and defenses of several towns and captured Derby from the Vikings, first of the 5 boroughs of the Danelaw that were key during the peace treaty of Guthrum and Alfred. And she captured it in the year 917. Then the Mercian and Wessex army beat Northumbrian Vikings in the 910s. In 918, Ethelfled dies, and Mercia merges with Wessex, House. Wessex was the undisputed ruler of the British Isles now. About 6 years go on, and then Edward dies after putting down a Mercian and Welsh revolt across his land that's now in Wales and Western Mercia. Then Æthelstan inherits all of England except Northumbria. Æthelstan is Edward's kid. He is known as the first king of the English, or king of England, not king of the English. Not even Alfred was called that, not even Edward was, but Æthelstan was the first one. During Æthelstan's reign, 7 years later, in the year 937, there was a battle at the town of Bernenburg. It was Æthelstan, king of the English, king of England, I'm just so used to saying it, versus Olaf Guthrumsson. He was an Irish Viking from Dublin. Constantine II of Scotland, in Owain op Deifmaul of Strathclyde, which is a forgotten country now that's just on the area in between Scotland and Mercia, not Northumbria. Æthelstan actually ended up winning, but we also have a little bit of recorded poetry about the battle. Never before this were more men in this island slain by the sword's edge, as books and aged sages confirm, since Angles and Saxons sailed here from the east, sought the Britons over the wild seas, since those warsmiths hammered the Welsh and earls, eager for glory, overran the land. Ethelward, one of Æthelstan's brothers, we don't for sure have his birth year, but we do have his death year of 998, wrote that the battle was one that unified England under Wessex's authority. He was a monk over in one of the Jarrows with royal heritage. Now, after that, Ethelstan started demanding his officials do their job and respect the law. More of king's role instead of just one of the boys trying to have fun with their friends. It's like when your boss tries being your friend and then they just end up being a bad boss. He decided, nope, I need to be a good boss and make sure that things actually happen. Ethelstan eventually died in the year 939, and his brother Edmund succeeded in October 27th of 1939, and reigned until May 26th, 946. Shout out to the past, King Olaf Guthrifsson, the loser at the Battle of Brunanburh, invaded the Midlands, probably of Mercia, after Ethelstan's death. So he's testing Edmund, Ethelstan's son. Edmund and Guthrifsson encountered each other at Leicester, and they brokered a peace by Archbishop Oda of Canterbury and Archbishop Welfstan I of York. The peace deal was that the Kingdom of York receives 5 boroughs, which were Leicester, Derby, Lincoln, Nottingham, and Stamford, and Wessex would get peace. And there was a huge difference between the ages of Edmund and Olaf. Olaf thought that he was going to be getting a good deal. Edmund said that he was thinking to himself he would outlive Olaf and then just retake the boroughs. Surely enough, Guthrifsson died in the year 941 or 942. We have a little bit of mixed dates there, and Edmund reconquers the 5 boroughs in 942. So he kind of reneged on the deal a little bit, but he also didn't because he made the deal with a man, a king, who is now dead. And back in that day, you'd swear your loyalty to a king and not the kingdom. Well, Edmund reconquers Northumbrian land in 944 and took Scythus land, but gave it to King Malcolm I of Scotland in 945. Then English monasteries started popping up everywhere on the coasts, and there was more peace with Scotland. Finally, King Edmund was assassinated in 946 by Leofa. Edred, his brother, took over the crown in 946. Olaf Sigtryggsson, king of Northumbria in the 940s, was driven out and became king of Dublin. He was invited back to York in 946, ruled until 952, because Eric Bloodaxe, who reigned until 954, took his place after they revolted against him again. And Eadred raided the Northumbrian lands to no avoid. He died at the age of 32 in 955. Eadwig was also known as Edwy, who had a son who was named as Eadwig, ruled over Wessex. Edgar Aethling ruled over Mercia, according to the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles. In the year 959, Eadwig died, Edward took over Wessex, and became Edgar the Peaceful. He is one of the most famous kings at in the Anglo-Saxon history. You have Alfred, Edward the Confessor, Edgar the Peaceful, and a couple other large ones like Offa, but there are many, many in general. He's just one of the big ones. And Edgar, he was a religious man. He brought back Dunstan, who was a religious man who was kicked out of Wessex, and he made him Bishop of Worcester in 957, after Bishop Comwald died. He was also made Bishop of London. So he went from being an expelled religious person to a bishop of Worcester to the bishop of London. And a year after that, he became Archbishop of Canterbury, one of the largest pilgrimage sites, or will be the largest pilgrimage site in all of England. Dunstan was also coronated by, well, Edgar was coronated by Archbishop Dunstan when he became king, and one of his main goals was to revive and rejuvenate the English monasticism, the monks, which he did do, and he brought the Benedictine rule to monasteries, the Benedictine monks, which was founded in around the, I want to say, 4th or 5th centuries. He brought that over from Italy to England. In the year 969, Edgar ordered that the land of Thanet, off the little tip of Kent there, was to be plundered. And 6 years later, Edgar died, and Edward the Martyr started his reign. A year later, in the first year of Edward the Martyr's king reign, feudalist rule, I guess you could say, there was a famine. And that's not a great way to start off your political rule, because then you have people blaming it all on you, when if it's a famine, it probably couldn't be prevented unless you were digging more ditches, which costed a lot more manpower, and back then, you know, there wasn't a lot of manpower to go with in the first place. And in the year 978, Edward the Martyr was martyred. Well, actually assassinated at Corfe Castle, along with the eldermen at his council, all but Dunstan, apparently, according to the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles. Ethelred the Unready, as he will later be named, his half-brother, took the throne. And the Vikings started raiding back again. This was not a good year for England. There are actually some theories that the assassination at Corfe Castle was put on by Edward the Martyr's wife, who wanted her son to get into the, well, his mother. They were half-siblings, so it would be Ethelred's mother, who was also Edward the Martyr's mother. She wanted Ethelred to be king instead of Edward, so there's a theory that she paid for some sort of assassination or something like that. In the year 991, there was the battle at Maidan. Vikings had victories there, which led to Danegeld, which was when the Anglo-Saxons would pay off the Vikings to stop attacking the shores, and they'd pay around 3,300 kilograms worth of silver, which at the time that I processed it out, which was probably about half a year ago, so the prices of silver would be a little higher, it was about $3 million or 2 million pounds, which now it would probably be around $2.5 million and 1.7 million pounds is my guess. And up to there, we have the rule of King Ethelred II. He is also known as Ethelred the Unready, which, if you translate it into Old English, it's Ethelred Unelder, which means the wise counseled, the poorly counseled, which is kind of a play on words that they probably never used during his lifetime, and it's probably more of a contemporary or post-contemporary use of his name. There's much more history delving into it. I've ordered several primary history books, like from Gildas and Bede and other works made by historians about it, so I've been reading those. That's why it's also been taking quite a while. And one of them is purely focusing on King Harold II, and it gives context up to the start of Ethelred II's reign, for the first time because he was a king twice over the same land. That's kind of a neat little fact of it. So I'm gonna be posting a little bit later than usual, which, if you stuck with me this long, I very, from the deepest pit of my heart, thank you. I know I should be doing this much more than I am, but school started back up. Summer was a lot of work at my job. Job basically became a 30-hour-a-week job instead of a 20-hour-a-week job, and I'm still a minor attending a public school. So thank you for your patience. I'll still be finishing out this series with 1060 and the Battle of Hastings and the last king of the Anglo-Saxons, King Harold II, who I personally think should be called King Harold One-Eye instead of King Harold II, just like how King Ethelred II is Ethelred the Unready. But more on that later. Thank you for listening. Bye.